Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always, and today I really want to have a conversation with you about communication. Communication is really at the heart of everything that we do as dentists, whether it's being able to relate to our patients and understand them so that we can meet their needs on both a clinical as well as an emotional level. But equally, it goes to the heart of every human interaction that we have on the planet. And because we are social creatures, our ability to communicate well impacts our life in so many different ways. Today, I'm going to be joined by a communication expert called Alan Stevens. Now, Alan is a communication expert, but in a different way that you might come to think of in traditional communication channels. Alan is excellent at facial recognition. He's excellent at being able to read facial expressions and understand what they mean. He's been described in various sources, a bit of a combination between the mentalist and Dr. Phil. He really looks behind what's going on, and his ability to draw inferences and make insightful comments and really get to the heart of the matter simply by observing someone's facial expressions is amazing. So in this particular interview, we're going to be talking about communication generally, but particularly the ability to read facial expressions and how that is a really, really useful skill for us as dentists. This is an out-of-the-box episode. I know you're going to want to take some notes on this, as always, and I'm going to really encourage you to do that because everything that Alan talks about is directly applicable to practice. Now, on a slightly different note, I just want to share with you our Savvy Dentist Facebook group is growing. Thank you to all those people who have joined. It's great to see such a great community there. And we've got lots of tools, tips, trainings in there. So if you want to come along and join the Savvy Dentist Facebook group, the sister Facebook group to this particular podcast, head across to drjessegreen.com/Facebook and that will take you there immediately. But for now, here's Alan. Have a great week and I look forward to seeing you on the flip side. Alan Stevens, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us. How's things with you?
Pretty good. And thanks very much for asking me along. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be a lot of fun. And mate, we've been trying to get this done for a little while. And of course, I've been crook and all that sort of stuff. But I am really pumped to have you here because there's so much I want to talk to you about, faces and recognition and profiling and all that sort of stuff. But before we get into that, you are regarded as the world's leading authority when it comes to facial profiling and understanding how to read people using their faces. But for the audience listening to this particular podcast, given this is an audio medium rather than visual, I'm wondering if you can give people a bit of an overview of, firstly, what does that actually mean to the layperson? And secondly, how did you find yourself in that line of work? It's not really a common line of work.
It certainly isn't. But really, it's the base of everything we do. Because being able to read somebody, you very quickly work out their personalities. You understand how they like to take in and process information. You know how they're likely to act in given situations. And you've also got the indicators that tell you what their emotions are. So it's all about how to connect with people. But how I got into it was probably because I was very bad at it in the first place. Originally came from Sydney at the age of 23 up to Newcastle and put in charge of a group of technicians who were all older than me. My second in charge was 38 and I was 23. So you can imagine the issues there of getting everybody on side.
Yeah, welcome to the deep end, hey?
Exactly. And then in my mid-30s, I joined the surf club and I thought, great, this is really good because they taught me into getting onto the board and I was pretty much the same age as everybody else. But as they pointed out to me, I'd only been there 5 minutes as far as they were concerned. And I'm club captain and also looking after three other beaches as his own supervisor. And I've got to tell everybody what to do. And they've been there since they were kids. So I was now the least experienced. And then in my late 30s, my first wife left and I had three boys to raise, 4, 11 and 12. So now I was in the deep end with understanding kids and the issues around there. So I went from being the youngest to the least experienced to, as I would say, right out of my depth.
And out on a limb, huh?
Definitely.
Oh, cool. Well, mate, that's a pretty interesting and, I suppose, diverse background you've got there. What I wanted to ask you is, when you found yourself in that position where you might have been the youngest, for instance, when you first arrived in Newcastle and you had to take charge of a group of people who were significantly older, significantly more experienced and similar in the surf club, how did you go about that process? Because I would imagine there's a lot of dentists here that straight out of university find themselves in a position where they're expected to lead by virtue of the fact that they're a dentist or they're in a certain role, and they haven't had the experience with how to do that. How do you kind of dive into that scenario and make it work?
Well, all I can say is I wish I had back then the skills that I've got today, because it would have made life so much easier.
You mean an old head on young shoulders?
Oh, definitely. Because at that point, I was lucky that I liked people. Even though I'd had a tough time at school and bullied a lot, I really wanted to really connect with the team that I had there. And I thought, well, I had to get them on side. I had to change the situation. I'd tired of being in the position where I was always on the outer. So I had to turn it around. So my focus then was on, how do I connect with them? So it was more a case of luck than anything else. When I look back now and I look at those people, I just seem to have picked the right way to actually connect with them. But I realized then, knowing what they look like, because some of them are still good friends of mine, even though we've gone our separate ways after all these years, I could see the traits that they had. And I went, I was just a matter of luck or gut intuition, you might say, that I actually picked it right when I was working with them. And that sort of explains where some of these traits come from as we go further through this.
Yeah, absolutely, which we're going to unpick that in a second. But I just want to come back to the coin rank connection, because I think that's a really useful topic to explore, because you've mentioned to me that being able to read faces is a way of really being able to connect really easily and deeply with someone. What I'm curious to understand is, as you went through that process of developing your own leadership, what other skills did you have to develop? Because being a leader is really critical, but it's not something that comes naturally for many people. Do you think it's something that can be learned, or is it something that you're born with?
It's something that we were born with originally but forgot. So it's something that anybody therefore can relearn anyway. That's what the connection with people is all about. All you have to do is to have that focus. You want to connect with people, and then knowing how to read them and how to speak to them, the connections become very quick. But if you're a leader and you don't connect with your people, this is one of the reasons why, as I say, 87% of people at the moment are disengaged in the work they're doing. And if you're a leader of an organization, a manager or an owner, it's imperative that you learn these skills, or otherwise those people who are working for you are only doing what they have to do to get by, which means their productivity is way down, and that's money out of your back pocket. So the incentive there is to connect with your people so that you can make more money. If you want to be mercenary about it, that's the way to look at it.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing too is, apart from the commercial element, you have a more fulfilling work experience, you have a more fulfilling life because your personal relationships flourish, and life becomes more joyous too, right?
That's exactly right. So when I train people, I take them through all the traits, and they'll come to me because they're in a business and they want to improve their connection with their suppliers, their customers or their work colleagues, etc. But in the process, we're looking at, well, how do we bring all the traits together and fully understand them? And the best way to do that is have them have a look at people they know very well. We make it personal. So, and we know when people are happy and enjoying what they're doing, they learn faster. So we end up profiling their families, their kids, their spouse, so they can have a better relationship with them. And they come back to me and they go, well, this was a real winner. I got so much out of it for my business, but now I'm really connecting with my wife or my husband or my children.
Yeah. And so there's this unexpected and serendipitous side benefit, which they came to you for one reason and they get benefit in all sorts of areas of their life, which is great. So I wanted to ask you, Alan, just, I suppose, facial profiling for most people is something, you know, we'll understand that certain looks mean certain things. You know, the look that your teenager gives you as she rolls her eyes, you know, we get that. We also understand that look from your spouse when they're cranky, and we get that too. But I want to go a little deeper than that. What are the sorts of things you're talking about when it comes to facial profiling? What is it that you're trying to interpret, and how do you then go about connecting?
Well, see, I work with a number of different modalities. And the first one, and probably the most important of the lot, is being able to understand the person's personality. We know when we ask people questions, like in psychometric profiles, they try and second guess what we're asking, especially if they're applying for a job. What do I have to say here to get the job? So, and if you think about it, everything that we feel and we're sensing inside, we actually show it on our face. So, as they say, our neurology and physiology are linked. So what we're feeling will be expressed. So think about lifting weights. You lift them over and over, you're going to build ridges and crevices. The same thing happens when you concentrate and think. So if you concentrate really deeply, you'll build ridges and crevices on your face. So your face is really a history of how you like to think and process. And that is a history of your personality. So if you look at the facial features, you know someone's personality, how to speak to them, how they like to be treated, how they like to behave in any given situation. And then to make sure you got it right, because I never assume I've got anything right. You always treat the person with respect that you're profiling, and because I want to make a better connection with them. So I start talking to them in the way that their facial features have told me that they like to be spoken to. Then I'm looking at the body language and the facial expressions that now tell me whether I'm on target or not. Exactly how they are they feeling about what I'm saying to them? Are they understanding it? So all of those together, the words, the facial features, the facial expressions and the body language, you can work somebody out very quickly, understand their personality, then secondly, understand their emotions, and in a very short period of time, also know their character.
Okay, so can you take us through the processes, not using video for this call, for instance, but if we were to be talking on video, can you give me a bit of an idea, if we were speaking now, what are the sorts of things you'd be checking in my facial expression as I'm talking to you? And the reason I'm asking this, Alan, is there'll be dentists who will be thinking, okay, if I go and speak to a new patient tomorrow, how can I try and form a connection more rapidly and more deeply than I might otherwise have been able to do? So what are some of the practical things that someone listening to this podcast could do to be able to take advantage of facial profiling?
Well, first of all, one of the things that I tell everybody is that, quite jokingly, I'm a social media stalker. And what I actually do by that is I go and look at someone's LinkedIn profile, their websites, their Facebook pages, etc. Wherever I can find a face, I can then look at their facial features and know how they like to be spoken to, how they like to be treated, so that I can put a presentation together before I even go and speak to them. Now, if I'm meeting them for the first time and I haven't had that opportunity, say you and I were there together and you just introduced somebody else who walked into the room, I'd be looking at particular features that would tell me exactly how much space to give that person to start with and then how much information.
And what sort of features would they be?
Okay, well, looking at your photograph here, the first thing I notice with you is your eyebrows are close to your eyes. There's only a very small gap between the top eyelid and your eyebrow. So that means that you're quite comfortable meeting people and standing close to them the first time you meet them. You're friendly with everybody. Whereas somebody who's got higher set eyebrows, then they're not that they're not friendly. It's that they are more discerning. They like to check out who's safe to be around and who's not safe to be around. Now, one thing I'll point out first of all is every trait has an upside and every trait has a downside. So those that are more discerning don't get caught by the con artists because they're very quickly checking everybody out and making sure that this person or that person is safe to be around. But they will come across to people like you and I who have got low set eyebrows as possibly not being friendly. So I can explain to those people how they can stand, how they can change the colour of their clothing, for instance, how they can speak to the person to change that impression but still keep their comfort in their space.
I think the thing I've just taken away from that, Alan, is that you and I are not very discerning, mate.
Well, it's another reason why I had to learn how to read faces. The number of business partners I had that, you know, ended up emptying the bank account and other things.
Yeah. And okay. So there's
real... It's a long time ago.
Yeah. So you've been, you know, I suppose, around the mulberry bush a couple of times with this. And so you've had the opportunity to know when someone is potentially going to be, I suppose, not a threat, but someone you've got to keep your eye on, make sure that they're ridgy-didge and doing all the right things. So, okay. So apart from the eyebrows, what else would you look for?
Well, when you look at the eyelid itself, in some people you'll see a fold of skin where the eyelid, when they look straight at you, the eyelid goes straight underneath that fold of skin. on other people, there's no folder skin. Those people that don't have the folder skin, it's what I call an exposed eyelid. In other words, those people only want the big picture. Just give me the big picture. Don't give me too many details, and they'll make their decision on that very quickly. The upside of that trade is, as a boss, very laid back. They don't get inundated by things. They're quite happy to work with the group. And the downside of it is, quite often, they can make important decisions without checking all the facts. Somebody who's got the concealed eyelid, where the eyelid goes up underneath that folder skin, or the folder skin's very close to it, is somebody, yep, they might want the big picture, but they won't make a decision until they've analysed it completely. So if you've got the exposed eyelid and you go up to somebody who's got the concealed eyelid, that person's more likely to go, where's the rest of the information? As you're trying to give the full picture, they'll keep dragging you back and want to go deeper on each of the items. The other way around, if you have the concealed eyelid and you're talking to somebody who's got the exposed eyelid, you're going to give too much information. They're going to try and finish your sentences. They're going to try and move you on. And quite often, and people who've got that concealed eyelid, just think about the situation. Have you had that moment where you've been speaking to somebody, everything's been going fine, and then all of a sudden they've switched off?
Yeah.
They've lost interest. That person is more likely to have had the exposed eyelid. They just wanted the big picture and you've given them too much information.
And what about racial variation? Is there racial variation in this as well?
On those particular traits, no, but when it comes to the width of the eyes, the flare of the nostrils, etc., there's a few there that are based in or related to culture. But as I say to people, I'm mainly looking for extremes. So those are the towards the middle and aren't going to be an issue at all.
Yeah, okay, got it.
So when I teach people to use this in their business, it's within a range. If I'm teaching somebody to actually do what I do and teach others and become a practitioner in this area and do things like helping people to find the right careers, hobbies and sports and everything else, then we go down and make sure there's an ethnic situation where particular culture has wider set eyes, for instance, I'll make an allowance for that. It might be 10% or whatever.
Sure.
So it's fine tune it.
Yeah, okay, got it. So ladies and gentlemen, we are having a conversation today with Alan Stevens, who is the leading authority in the world when it comes to facial profiling. He's been featured in all sorts of media, and you can check out his material on alanstevens.com.au. And Alan, I'm taking your course at the moment. I'm going through the modules. And what I found really fascinating in that whole process is this is just a whole world that I'd never really thought about, experienced, and candidly understood. So I wanted to ask you a question around that. And that is, where does this fit in with psychometric evaluation? Say we're wanting to interview a person for a role, and traditionally we might have done a psychometric analysis or psychometric evaluation around a person's character and behavior. Does this replace psychometric evaluation, or does it add to it and complement it?
Well, if I had to start fresh without having either one, I would go with this. However, I always say to people, if you're using psychometric profiling, it's working within your organization. It's not a matter of throwing it out. It's a matter of complementing it with what I do as well. If you profile you've got somebody who's applied for a job. How many people have applied for that job? Could be hundreds. You haven't got the time to go through and read every face. So you put them through a psychometric profiling. Yes, there's a possibility that they will interpret the wording wrong. They may not be in a good emotional state when they do the profile, etc. And you might lose somebody who's good for the job, but there's bound to be others in that capture who do fit that category. When you interview the person, that's when you can really take it to a new level.
So that's really interesting. So when you do interview someone, do you interview in a one-to-one scenario, or do you think, or does it change at all if someone's in a group interview? Or walk me through that interview process and where the facial profiling might fit into that, given certain circumstances.
Okay. Well, think about the fact that through all of our five senses, we take in, as they say, around about 2 million bits of information. But we only process about 134 bits. What we actually do is we distort, we generalize, and we delete information because it's far too much for us to process. And that's the problem. When we're talking to somebody, we're listening to the words, because what were we told at school? Listen to what's going on. The end result is, while we focus on listening, we're not seeing the unconscious indicators, the body language, the expressions on the face. So with that, it's always best, and in any interview, they should have two people. So one is at least recording information, and the other one is asking the questions and listening to the responses back. But the other person is looking for the visual responses, the body language, the expressions. Because as they say, and I actually put it on a post today, somebody asked me about, is it important what we say to people? I said, well, words are only worth 7% of the communication, and the rest of it is the truth. So the body language and the expressions and everything else, that's where the real information is, because your tone of voice is worth 38% and the words, the body language is worth 55%. So it's, the words aren't really that important.
So, and given that we think in pictures, right, we don't think in sentences, we tend to think in imagery. So walk me through the process of, I suppose, bringing that person for the interview. And you've got your two people there, one to record the information, the other one to take note of the facial and body language expressions. What sort of things are you looking for? Because my experience with interviews is that as much as the candidate is out to sell themselves in a role, sometimes we're out to sell ourselves as an employer of choice as well. How do you make a determination whether what they're saying is fact, whether it's fiction, or whether it's something in between?
Okay, well, when it comes down to, well, take it to the a further extent into, say, an interrogation, for instance, or a questioning of somebody about facts that actually happened. The best way to do that is with open questions: describe, explain, tell me about things. And while they're telling you that, you're actually looking at where they look as well. We look up for visual, we look out to the side for what, how things sound. When we're talking about, well, how did such and such sound, or what did we hear? And we look down to go into our feelings, and also our, what we call our internal dialect, how we're thinking inside our heads. But when we look up, we'll look out to the left to remember and out to the right to create an answer. However, not everybody is wired that way. Some people are actually opposite. So in every interview, before you even start, you make the person feel comfortable. You tell them about what you're actually going to go through. That this is a chance for them to see if they actually like your organization as well, just the same as you're trying to find out whether they fit into the organization. So you connect with them, you put them at rest. While you're talking to them, you're talking about general things and you're looking where their eyes go to actually source information. That's giving you a baseline, first of all, where they actually look when they're telling the truth on things that they know about. Then when you ask those questions and you go, right, yeah, we'll tell, describe, explain different situations, because there's always those questions, you know, if you had a time when things have gone against you at work and that, or a situation went bad, how did you handle that? So you're now looking at how they respond with that. You're looking at their body language and you're looking at the expressions on their face as well. But you've already pre-profiled them on their facial features. If that's somebody who has a trait like a narrow face, is somebody who builds their confidence by doing things over and over, they're not going to be able to jump in very confidently. When we know that if they're given a new situation that they say, well, no, I've been through this before, and they're stumbling with an answer, it can be nerves, but we will find out by asking particular questions and the way, you know, by the time we've finished the interview, because it goes on for, 90 minutes or so, and we let them know it's going to take that long, and there's going to be 30 minutes where we're going to be asking questions, there's 30 minutes we're getting responses, and there's a period of time for them to ask us questions as well. So in that, we've already benchmarked them, we know where they look, we're asking them questions, we're getting more into, okay, well, the five W's and the H, where, what, when, where, and how, who, and what happened in those situations. So they now start to tell you more detail. But you can also then ask them yes and no questions to finalize it, because they fill in gaps, and when the gaps are very narrow, that's when we can ask them positive answers, and we really look at their expressions at that point. Where are they actually looking, and what are the expressions on their face as well?
That is so fascinating, because one of the things I think for anyone listening to the show, they've either been for an interview or they're conducting interviews, and oftentimes a bit of both. And I think being able to make that connection early, being able to understand who's in front of you. I love the pre-profiling tip. I think that is absolute gold. So if you're listening, I hope you made a note of that. Please go back, rewind, write some notes, pre-profile before you ask those questions that you really want to check and see. I think that's absolute magic. So Alan, I want to move on to a different scenario, and it's dealing with an anxious patient. One of the things that we experience as dentists if not on a daily basis, a very regular basis, is the notion that people don't want to come to see us. If I had a dollar for every time I heard the, no offense, doc, but, you know, I hate being here kind of thing. And one of the things I think for all of us is we would like to be able to put patients at ease better, faster, for a couple of reasons. One is clearly we want the patient to have a good experience. That's number one. But equally for our own benefit, most of us find that when the patient is relaxed, we relax into doing the work for them, as compared to when the patient is highly stressed, highly agitated, we become agitated too. So how do we go about trying to defuse some of that anxiety?
Well, just go back to one of the traits we already talked about, the level of information they need to hear. If they've got an analytical trait and you're just telling them, oh, it's okay, and you're not giving them enough detail, they're going to stress out. And I can give you an example of, and this was with a young child. I had a friend of mine ask me if I'd profile his daughter for him, and she was only 18 months old at the time. And she'd had a phobia with the vacuum cleaner since she was about 2 months. Every time they turned it on, she would freak out. I told her, I didn't know about the phobia at that time, but I just told him about the way she learned. She's analytical. She needed more information to understand things to make a decision. And he's very much big picture. So I knew when he told me about the phobia later on, I said, ah, what'd you do? He said, well, I had the vacuum cleaner in pieces. I brought her into the room and I talked to her and I really explained everything more than I normally would ever use myself. And he said at the end of it, I put the vacuum cleaner together. We turned it on and all she wanted to do was push it around, because he had actually connected with her and told her the information she needed to know in a way that she was able to trust it. Whereas with him just talking in the way that he wanted to speak, he wasn't connecting with her. Now, you can imagine a patient in your chair and you notice straight away that they're analytical and you're just giving him, oh, it's okay, but you're not telling them what the process is going to go through, how many people have been through it, et cetera. Giving them more information that gets them into a conversation. And because you're connecting with them, they've got trust in you as well, which they don't have if you haven't connected with them.
And trust is huge. I mean, trust is an absolute...
It's everything.
Yeah, trust is... I don't like to use this word because it sounds like I'm devaluing it, but trust is an absolute currency in my view, because one of the things that we find is, as you know, Alan, we've spoken a lot about client retention and in our case, patient retention. And one of the things that we find is one of the key drivers of retaining patients and indeed retaining staff and I suppose maintaining any relationship in life is trust. So if you can connect and create trust, you're going to retain your patients, retain your staff, have meaningful relationships. So how then, apart from understanding the way to communicate, whether someone's big picture or analytical, how then can you engender trust? How can you consciously create trust?
Well, I find that the biggest thing is most people are trying to figure out how to do it. And I'm going, well, look, if you can really focus on the person that you're dealing with, the whole thing is, why are you talking to them in the first place? We want to have a good relationship. We want everything to go smoothly, whether that be in a partnership relationship, a love relationship with your children or in business. We want to have a great experience. And if we focus on the other person, then they will have that great experience and therefore we receive as well. It's by giving we receive. So if we focus on them, when we talk to them the way they want to be spoken to, we don't even think about it. After you've learned how to read the traits, it becomes second nature. And if I'm giving a talk and I've got, 100 people in the room, for instance, I find that people go, well, you connected with everyone in the room. And I go, oh, but I wasn't consciously thinking what I had to say to each person because I've unconsciously read them. It's now in my neurology that's just the way that it becomes my second nature. I just switch the way I'm talking to people to the way that each individual wants to be spoken to when I'm looking and talking to them. It just becomes natural.
Yeah. And again, I really love the fact that it's about connection. And without sounding like I'm repeating myself, the importance of being present, the importance of really engaging with the person that you're interacting with is crucial. And one of the things that I've made comment on in the past is we live in a more connected world than ever before from a technological standpoint. But in many ways, we are more disconnected than ever before as well because there's constant distraction, constant interruption. And so what I'm hearing you say, if I've got it correct, is be present, be engaged, be in tune with that person, understand who's in front of you, take the time to really connect and to engage. Then the relationship comes, then trust comes, then patient retention comes, then treatment acceptance or sales, if you want to use that language, comes. And ultimately, things all stem from the ability to communicate, to read people, to connect and build a relationship.
And that's exactly right. So when I've had a real estate agent ask me not long ago, and that, well, where does my business fit into the scheme of things? And I said, well, look, if every interaction on earth, every business were different components of a house, like the doorknobs, the door frames, et cetera, mine would have to be the footings of the foundation, because unless you build relationships with people, you've got nothing. They don't buy your product or service, they buy you. And that's through that trust. So that's where it all stems back to. And that's why I always say to people, that's where you've got to come back to, is build that trust with somebody. You mentioned it being the currency before. And as I say, well, relationships, everything's a sale. We're going to sell ourselves to that partner that we want to have as a life partner. We sell ourselves. We get our kids to eat their broccoli, for instance. There's a sale. So everything is a sale when you come down to it. And therefore, that is the currency, as you said, the trust.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that relationships are the foundation as well. I wrote this book on patient retention, and a mate of mine who gave the manuscript to a couple of mates to pre-read before I released it. And one of them just came back and said, it's a book about relationships. I said, of course it is. Everything's about relationships. He goes, yeah. So
that's it.
It is the foundation of everything. Alan, you've been incredibly generous with your time. And I am really conscious of the fact that this is a huge subject and we've scratched the tip of the iceberg, not even. And so for anyone listening, I'd really encourage you to head along to alanstevens.com.au, and that is Stevens with a V. Mate, on that particular website, there's some resources and bits and pieces. If someone was new to this and they wanted to kind of get a bit of an understanding, where would you direct them on the website? Would it be to the blog first or the videos? What do you suggest people kind of start to look at first? I know they can take your course, but what would be the icebreaker?
Well, at the end of it, there's plenty of media stuff on there and everything else. But at the end of the day, what it comes down to is what's in it for the person who's gone to the website in the first place? What was in it for you when you decided to find out about the course? I always send people to the success story page. It's full of videos testimonials from school teachers, from parents, from coaches, counselors, psychologists, business people, where you can actually see what they found and how they applied it and what they achieved from it. So that then you've got an idea, well, okay, there might be something here for me. I need to find out more. Then you can look at the rest of the website or get in touch with me and we'll have a chat.
Perfect. All right. Alan, mate, you've been very generous, as I said earlier. If we were to leave our audience with just a couple little pearls of wisdom that they could take into their practice on Monday morning, what would be a couple of things that you would just want people to understand and to know? If, you know, the world according to Alan, what would be the two or three things that you'd want people to really deeply, deeply appreciate and deeply understand?
Well, the first thing I always say to people is know yourself first of all. Know why you do what you do and why you want to do the things that you're planning to do. It comes down to the same thing. Understand your own personality and profile first. Then focus on the other person and understand theirs, and then talk to them in the way that they want to be spoken to. So change the way that you want to be spoken to the way that matches with them, and that way you'll make a strong connection with them. But above everything, as I always say to people, and that is my favorite saying, has been the most important thing I've ever learned, was the next thing I learned after I thought I knew everything. So never stop learning, always be open to learn. And just remember that, yes, there's some people out there you probably don't want to know, but if you can profile them, well, you'll be safe there. But most people are genuine people who want to have better relationships. So focus on that, and what you give out, you'll get back.
Oh, mate, that is absolute gold. It's no wonder, mate, that you get called in to talk to people like Disney, the Australian government, you know, Clubs New South Wales, Gillette, and all those big companies. You've got such a mammoth reputation in this space. Mate, I really appreciate you taking some time out to share some insights, some practical and useful tips for our guys to be able to put into play. So thank you, mate. You're an absolute gem.
Thank you very much. It's been great being here. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.